Hey, good afternoon, Juneau. It's just seconds before 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. I have a great lineup of guests to talk with us today. Some members of a panel that's going to be giving a panel discussion on racism in Juneau at tonight's UAS Evening at Egan presentation will be here to tell us what's going to be going on up at the UAS campus at 7 o'clock tonight. Laura Haywood will drop by to talk about Sunday's Juneau Cabaret performance. We'll get a little preview of next Monday's Native American Heritage Month lecture. Rosita Worrell will be joining us. She's going to be talking on Tlingit spirituality in the 21st century. And Catherine Kell is going to come by from Canvas. She'll be talking about some upcoming art classes and happenings there. And there's a comedy show fundraiser for the 4As coming up Saturday, and we'll give you a preview of that. All of that's coming up on Juneau Afternoon. Stay with us. Time now for National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The native village of Eyak is celebrating 20 years of sobriety. As KCHU's Tony Gorman reports, the two-day annual sobriety celebration kicks off today in Cordova, Alaska.
For the last two decades, the Native Village of Eyak sobriety celebration has inspired many who have had past battles with alcoholism and drug addiction to stay sober. NVE event coordinator Belen Cook says some people continue to come back to the event even though they have been sober for years.
That person continues coming every year. And that sometimes when this person may be tempted, he remembers the sobriety celebration, and that keeps him clean and sober.
Some just to come to have a good time.
To gather, to support one another, and to celebrate sobriety celebration, whether it's with the good food, the dancing. It really has a life of its own.
The event includes speakers, dance groups, and an honoring of veterans. Governor Sean Parnell and First Lady Sandy Parnell are expected to attend a first for the event. It will also be filmed by the television show Exploring Alaska. Reporting from Valdez, I'm Tony Gorman.
As hundreds of Native leaders gathered in the nation's capital this week for the annual summit with the Obama administration, they talked about Washington's football team. And as Matt Laszlo reports, many are not fans of the NFL team's name.
Here in Washington, we've been hearing a lot from athletes, commentators, and politicians about whether it's time for the Redskins to change their name. Those discussions are also taking place among Native leaders from across the U.S.
If that hurts somebody's feelings, then they should change the name.
That's Tommy Christian from Montana's Fort Peck Reservation. Even as Native leaders try to tackle the soaring crime and poverty rates on their lands, Christian says they're still taking some time to focus on the Redskins because they see the name as grossly offensive.
That's a sad thing that anybody, any people, would continue to accept just for the sake of money, degrading a whole nations of people.
David Bean of the Puyallup tribe of Tacoma, Washington, says his tribe is playing a very D.C. game in trying to affect change. Lobbying.
We've reached out to our local organizations, the Seattle Seahawks, Seattle Mariners, and Seattle Sounders, and asked them to join us in sending the message back here to D.C. that this is offensive to Indian country.
Earlier in the week, some tribal leaders reportedly thanked the president for saying he'd consider a name change if it were up to him. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
A Cherokee Nation citizen is breaking ground as a female mixed martial arts fighter in Oklahoma. KGOU's Susan Shannon has more.
Kathina Catron is a surgical tech by day and a mom to her 7-year-old son, Coy. But in her other life, she is one tough cookie. Kathina Catron is one of the top women fighters in mixed martial arts, or MMA, in Oklahoma.
We kickbox, we do judo, we do wrestling, jiu-jitsu, any kind of mixed martial art. A lot of it is utilized in the cage. So that's basically what the MMA is just everything all through into one.
In such a male-dominated sport, Catron says,
people are still trying to accept what we're doing, but in the end, I think that we are better fighters because we're smaller. We have to be really technical with everything that we do in the cage because we're not as strong as the guys.
At 5'3", 123 pounds, Catron competes in the flyweight division. Catron was 5-0 in her amateur career and is 4-3 as a professional. A recent injury has sidelined her, but she will be back fighting at the end of January. For National Native News, I'm Susan Shannon in Oklahoma.
Funeral services for a Hopi high school football player are taking place today on the Hopi Reservation in Arizona. According to the Associated Press, Charles Uvella died at a Phoenix hospital Monday after he suffered a traumatic brain injury from a game Saturday. The 17-year-old was remembered Wednesday during a memorial at Hopi High School. The school is taking donations for his family. On November 16, 1990, the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act was enacted. NAGPRA provides a process for museums and federal agencies to return certain Native American sacred items, human remains, and cultural and funerary objects to tribes. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's about 5 minutes and a half after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My first two guests are here to tell us about an opportunity that the community in Juneau has to join a panel discussion tonight at 7 o'clock up at the University of Alaska Southeast Campus. And my guests are pretty much able to introduce themselves, but Hune Lance Twitchell, who is a professor at the university teaching in the Native Studies program?
Yes,
is it
Native
now
Languages.
Native Studies? Native
Alaska
Languages.
Native Languages.
Okay, okay. And Phil Campbell, who's the pastor of the Northern Light United Church, is here as well. And this panel discussion is concerning a very timely topic in Juneau, the topic of racism. So can you give us a little background on how this came to be?
Sure. There's a group of people. There's sort of two parallel tracks, I think, that brought this event together. One is there's a group of people that just started meeting and thinking about how do we combat racism in our community. And so we were trying to take really proactive approaches, look at what some successful organizations are doing in their communities to create change, to bring things to the surface, give people a sort of a language they can use to talk about some of these things, especially when it comes to racism and looking at power structures and other things. There's a history of different events here in Juneau, and then there's current events here in Juneau. From my perspective, a lot of those things just sort of lived in the Native community, and you didn't, if you talk to people about it, a lot of times they wouldn't believe you, or there would be some reason why things were the way they were. And so we wanted to get a group together to try and figure out how to empower more of our community members to talk about it and to make some of these things just a part of the conversation that occurs. And then Phil, I'll let him talk about what he was doing as well, because then these tracks really came together in, I think, a really neat way.
Phil?
Well, the congregation I serve, Northern Light United, is a multiracial congregation, and so the issues of race are always with us as they are in the larger community. There's also conversation that's been occurring in the Juneau community as there have been incidents, race-themed party that happened some months ago. There were the national issues of the George Zimmerman acquittal in Trayvon Martin's death that once again brought to the dominant culture attention and to sort of popular attention the enduring issues of race and racism in our society. I think we live in a time where some believe in the dominant culture that racism is a thing of the past, and it's an enduring entrenchment in the systems that that govern our life, sometimes even invisibly, I mean, in ways that we may not even be aware of. I believe are real. I know Clunaid and others on the panel know that they are real, and so it's never a wrong time to try to address these issues and move forward to a better place for everyone. And that's really, you know, where we're ending up, is that this is a drain on the creativity and the capacity of human potential. And so it's something we need to address so that we can flourish.
Lance, the group that you have selected for the panel or that came together for the panel was actually this discussion group that you've mentioned a couple of times. Who else are the members?
So the other members are Ishmael Hope, Nami Erickson, M.K. McNaughton, and Saul Neely. And so that's the group. And really, one thing we want to stress is we're not coming together to talk about racism. We're coming together to talk about ending racism. And so even just making those powerful statements, saying, well, that's our mission. You know, whether we can do it or not, or people believe we can do it or not, that's what our mission is.
So, now, Neely is a professor at the University of Alaska Southeast.
Yes, he is.
Okay. And M.K. McNaughton and Christy Nami Erickson are two people that I know as artists. And I'm wondering, are there other places that they come at this? Or?
Sure, because they're artists, but they're also community advocates. And so they look at different methods to make this, you know, and so kind of it started through different Facebook conversations and then figuring out that we were sort of communicating as a team and really trying to, sometimes when you bring awareness of racism out, you get attacked. Sometimes people even say it wasn't a problem until you said it was a problem. And so these are the types of things that occur. And so we end up sort of gelling together. Not to fight back, but just to sort of have a voice that says, you know, we don't have to stand for this in our community because we care about each other. And there was a time when a lot of this stuff could just happen. And so I think Phil's right. A lot of people, you know, they think it's a thing of the past. They think it's people getting attacked by dogs and sprayed by hoses. And it's something very visual where, you know, whites only, colored only type of establishments. But we still have a lot of problems here. And some of it's surface stuff. Getting treated differently at stores, having people follow you through grocery stores, having people make comments about your ancestors being cannibals or other just really silly, uneducated things. But then the other parts, too, are just knowing what the power structures are, knowing that if authorities get involved, there might be violence against you because of who you are.
Phil, you characterize your congregation as being multiracial. Have you examined these problems within that congregation? Has your church considered these ideas? Is that something that goes on?
Yes, it's part of our ongoing conversation as a congregation. And as we are hosting a series of community-wide conversations, what I've called about and across the racial divide, a third to a half of the participants have been members of the congregation. And so it's something that's as alive and needs to be addressed in the congregation as it does in the community at large. And you know, I think the very fact of the desire to talk is a good sign. And yet there's also a weariness, particularly in communities of color. We've been there before. We've done this. You know, how many times are we going to talk about something and nothing changes? And yet, there is, in a way, certainly I am very grateful for a willingness to try again. I think there's something in the spirit of people that, you know, yearns toward hope and wants to believe that though the arc of history is long, it does indeed bend toward justice. And so this is an opportunity to try again, not to talk in and of itself, but to talk with a sense of purpose and movement, a direction toward justice, a direction toward change.
So the opportunity that exists is tonight at 7 o'clock at the University of Alaska Southeast. Are you in the venue are you working in?
We're in the library.
So you're in the larger space in the downstairs in the library where people can kind of sit.
We're very excited. You know, part of us, you know, when we had discussions, we said, well, if you had a meeting about this, are people going to come?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and are the people who need to sort of be a part of this conversation, are they going to have to? Are they going to appear? And so one thing that we also wanted to stress is this isn't the only chance to do these types of things. We really hope a lot of people can come. But we really, you know, our goal is that this continues to be a regular thing. So at the other end, we'll be talking about other things that are going to happen in the community, workshops, other gatherings. And a lot of the things, if people say, I don't want racism, but I don't know what to do about it, those are the types of things we'll talk about tonight. Is here are some practical things that will actually change our community.
And so this conversation starts at 7 o'clock tonight with the panel discussion, and then opens up to the audience to participate in a larger discussion.
Yes. So there'll be a chance to be a part of a larger discussion. And then we'll also be talking about future opportunities to keep that discussion going in a number of different venues at the Northern Light Church, at the university. We're going to be bringing in other organizations that help facilitate these types of things in the community. And also we're going to talk about organizations. If your organization has a reputation of being inhospitable towards certain people, we want to help that organization change.
Okay. So the opportunity arises. It's tonight at the University of Alaska Library. That's downstairs in the main large gathering room as you come in. Adequate parking, I think, up in the main parking lot up there, so nobody should have to stay away for those reasons, although I think one row of it's taken up with the construction of the new dormitory.
Yeah, one row is closed, but right. There's a lot of parking there, and there'll be some parking, if that were full, down by the chapel by the lake.
So this may be a little, it may take people a little bit out of their comfort zones, but that is a good thing as well. So 7 o'clock
Indeed.
Tonight, University of Alaska Library. Phil, Hune, thank you very much for coming and telling us about this opportunity.
Ms. Cheesh.
After 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. We're in the middle of Juneau afternoon music there by Anushka Shankar. And I have a surprise guest. I was a little bit surprised, but she's always welcome in my studio because of the wonderful work that she does. Rena Sims is here. St. Vincent de Paul Turkey Drive is on, and I think this has to do with the turkey drive. Is
yes.
that right?
Thank you for having me.
Hey, my pleasure.
Such short notice. We want to say thank you to Juno for giving us so many turkeys. We want to say especially thank you to David McDowell, who gave us 250 turkeys, Channel Construction 25, but we have about 500 people that are signed up. Mm. We thank you for the individuals that have delivered turkeys and canned goods over at St. Vincent. Now we have the school district. We have some other agencies here that we give baskets out to. We're going to do it over at Postal Way behind the post office there at Alaska Housing. If you would like to donate, it takes about $40 per basket. And the basket is turkey, dressing, corn, green beans, cranberry sauce, pie, pumpkin pie mix. We would prefer the pies itself. And whatever you think your family will eat on Thanksgiving Day, again, I can't say thank you enough to this community. As I keep telling this community, we do it to the highest degree. We have 30,000 at least here in Juneau, and our numbers are about 500, so that's not even 10% of what is here. And Juneau, it's not the corporations really that take care of this city, it is the individual people, and I want to say thank you. I also want to say thank you to Super Baron and to Safeway and other stores that give, but mainly it is our people. Myra Monson, I'm hoping you're out there. Hope you come on through again this year for us. Thank you.
Okay, so one more time, if people want to donate, they need to do what?
Go to Smith Hall on Till Street. The address is 8617 Till Street, and you can drop off your turkeys and your canned goods. If you can't come in and you would like to donate over the web, it's SVDP St. Vincent DePaul Juneau on Twitter. And then the telephone number is 789-5535. So again, the address is 8617 Till Street. The telephone number is 789-5535. The dates of giving away the baskets are the 21st, 22nd, 23rd. We put together the baskets the weekend on the 18th and the 19th, and we love volunteers. We really do.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thanks
thank
for all
you
your
very
effort,
much.
Too.
All right.
This is Bird Note. At the edge of the Arctic lies the vast boreal forest. In summer, it's home to legions of nesting birds, from warblers to loons. In early autumn, nearly all these birds depart for warmer points south. By November, this dark land of spruce and firs is a cold, forbidding place. Yet one remarkable songbird stays behind, the boreal chickadee. This tiny, dark-capped fluffball lives here year-round. How do boreal chickadees survive the harsh winter? First, during summer, they cache a great deal of food, both insects and seeds. Moths and beetles and even aphids are stashed away in bark crevices and under rough edges of lichens. The chickadees also store a lot of spruce seeds. Then in fall, the birds put on fresh, heavier plumage, and their feathers are more dense than most birds, creating a comfy down parka for the chickadee. And most impressive, the chickadees adapt to deep cold by lowering their body temperature at night from 108 degrees to just 85 degrees. In this way, the birds conserve their stores of insulating fat. So, hats off to the boreal chickadee, a truly rugged bird, even if it weighs only 1/3 of an ounce. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
22 minutes after 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My next two guests are here to tell us about an upcoming event, which is a sort of a Juneau tradition, I guess, by now. This is called the Juneau Cabaret, and it's coming up November 3rd.
17th.
I'm sorry, November 17th. This is dated November 3rd. Hey, they don't give me anything here. The Sunday at 7 is basically the game here.
Right.
And it's over at Rockwell upstairs, which is newly renovated.
Well, it's not done yet. And
so the downstairs,
the downstairs,
see jackhammers running down there and drowning out the band.
But the ballroom is fine. Okay. And what they told me was that they moved the bar from downstairs upstairs.
Well,
so we'll be all set.
We're all set. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, if the bar's open, you can drown out a jackhammer.
And there will be food. There will also be food, I assure you.
Okay. And so, Laura, you're kind of the organizer and centerpiece of this whole operation?
Well, I don't know if I go that far, but I'm certainly the organizer. And we've been doing this for quite a few years now. My partner in crime is Tom Loker, and we're also helped out by Bobby Mitchell. But Tom's the one that counts, and he thinks this is our 15th show.
Uh-huh.
But I can't swear by that.
Sarah, how many shows have you done with him?
This will be my first.
This will
He's
be
one
your
of
first.
Our newbies.
Okay. And so, Sarah, you're singing as part of the show.
Yeah.
Now, the format here is an accompanist and a soloist, right?
Correct.
And then a little break for refreshing your drink, and then another accompanist and another soloist, and like that.
Correct.
So a lot of entertainment here. You've got, let me count here real quick. 1, 2, 3.
14,
thank you. See, I never could have done it by myself. Okay, so you got 14 vocalists and a number of accompanists.
I think it's
fewer,
six this time.
Yeah, who are going to accompany more than one person. Who are you singing with?
Doug Smith is playing for me.
Ooh, Doug is amazing.
Oh, he's wonderful. I performed with him in June for a similar get-together, and it was a lot of fun. And I said, Doug, we've got to do this one. So he's like, sure. So he's great to work with.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of fun.
So what kind of stuff are you singing?
I'm singing a Jerome Kern song called The Song Is You, and another one from Lady in the Dark called My Ship.
Ah.
How it's a... Rodgers and Hammerstein? Is that correct?
Somebody. One
anyway,
of those guys.
Yeah. Old musical.
Yeah, old
it
musical.
It was premiered by Julie Andrews. So.
Oh, okay.
And can I just say, Sarah is a powerhouse singer. Her specialty is opera.
Ah.
And so she's a crossover, and this will be her first Juneau Cabaret, and I'm so excited to have someone like her. And Doug is also, it's his first Juno Cabaret also, so I think they're going to be a great addition.
Yeah. Hey, so who else?
Okay, well, I got my list here. Should I run through the names?
Go for it, go for it.
Okay, we've got Jack Brandt, okay. Cameron Brockett, Sarah Brown right here, Cindy Brown Mills, Beatrice Cajol, John Clow, and just as an aside, he's also going to do a duet with his with an accompanist named Janice Capel, who usually comes to town for the Byron McGilvray workshops,
okay.
But she's with us for a few months now, so she's going to sing and accompany. Callie Connerton, mm-hmm. whose father happens to work at this radio station, I believe. John Haywood, Mimi Herman, Bobby Mitchell, Mike Pearson, Linda Stover, and Margaret Vrolik.
Okay, so an amazing group of people.
Yeah.
And each one of these folks has put together like two songs.
Yes.
And so they
yeah.
take the stage, they knock your socks off.
Yeah, and we've got a couple fun duets. Cindy Brown Mills has invited Wade to sing with her.
It's not on my list.
I'm sorry. I apologize, Wade, if you're listening. I've forgotten your last name.
We need your last name
yes.
quickly.
And then another fun one. My husband, John Haywood, is being accompanied by Rob Cohen, who's a tremendous jazz pianist. And I don't think everyone knows that Rob can actually sing also. So they're going to do a duet. Really looking forward. That'll be Robert's debut as a singer on the show. So.
So the Juno mm-hmm. Cabaret is this pay as you can. I'm
right.
wondering who do the proceeds go to? Are you self-supporting operation?
Yes, and what we're trying to do now is save up for some of our own music equipment and soundboard and that sort of thing, because we're a little primitive how all that works, and we'd like to be able to have slightly better stuff than we've got. So we have a little kitty going for that. So you know, besides paying our expenses, that's where the money's going.
So there's
going
to be a can by the door, folks, and we want
yes.
you to generously
yes.
contribute to the sound
and
system.
And
right.
the shows will just keep getting better
yeah,
if
okay.
you do.
So and you have every plan to do this next year and
we,
next year
we
and next year?
We do it quarterly.
Oh, okay.
We do it four times a year. So okay. our next one will probably be in January. Our schedule's a little off right now because Tom, who is such a huge mainstay for us, Tom Loker, is going to be traveling. He's just retired from his state job, but he'll be back by the end of January, so that'll be our next one.
Okay, so Juno Cabaret starts at 7 o'clock on Sunday night. Pay as you can at the door. It's at the second floor ballroom of the Rockwell Restaurant, and
correct.
They've moved the bar up there, so folks, get ready for a rockin' good time. Sarah, break a leg.
Thank you.
Thanks, Pat.
Ladies and gentlemen, and now, once again, Fräulein Sally Bowles!
What good is sitting alone in your room? Come hear the music play. Life is a cabaret, old chum. Come to the cabaret. Put down the knitting, the book and the broom. Time for a holiday. Life is a cabaret, old chum. Come to the cabaret. Come taste the wine, come hear the band, come blow your horn, start celebrating. Right this way, your table's waiting. No use permitting some prophet of doom to wipe every smile away. Like fear's a cabaret, oh, chum. Come to the cabaret. I used to have a girlfriend known as Elsie.
And And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 15th of November, 2013. It was on this day, 1940, that 75,000 American men were called to armed forces duty under the first peacetime conscription in American history. There have been a long history of resistance to mandatory military service in this country. During World War I, an estimated 3 million young men refused to register for the draft, and 12% of those called up did not report for duty or they deserted. President Roosevelt was up for re-election November 1940. He was worried the draft might hurt his chances, but in October, 16 million young men registered with a selective service, and the call-up numbers were chosen by lottery. During the course of World War II, the draft selected 19 million men and inducted 10 million. The draft lapsed after World War II briefly. President Truman started it up again, and it continued until 1973. The historian Stephen Ambrose wrote about selective service, "Today, Cajuns from the Gulf Coast have never met a black person from Chicago. Kids from the ghetto don't know a middle-class white. Mexican Americans have no contact with Jews. Muslim Americans have few Christian acquaintances." But during World War II and the Cold War, American men from every group got together in the service, having a common goal to defend their country. They learned together, pledged allegiance together, sweated together, hated their drill sergeants together, got drunk together, went overseas together. What they had in common, patriotism, a language, a past they could emphasize and venerate, mattered far more than what divided them. It's the birthday of the poet Ted Berrigan, born in Providence, Rhode Island, 1934. Served in the Korean War, went to college at the University of Tulsa, then went to New York City. His book, The Sonnets, was published in 1964, a big success. He died at the age of 48. And it's the birthday of Georgia O'Keeffe, born in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, 1887, who fell in love with the deserts of New Mexico and devoted the rest of her career to painting desert mountains and flowers and stones and skulls. Here's a poem for today by Ted Berrigan entitled Peace. What to do when the day's heavy heart, having risen, laid in the already darkening east and prepared at any moment to sink into the west, surprises suddenly and settles for a time at a lovely place where mellow light spreads evenly from face to face. The day's usual aggressive contrary beat now softly dropped into a regular pace, the head riding gently its personal place, where pistons feel like legs, on feelings met like lace. Why take a walk, then, across this town? It's a pleasure to meet one certain person you've been counting on to take your measure, who will smile and love you sweetly at your leisure. And if she turns your head around like any other man, go home and make yourself a sandwich of toasted bread and ham with butter, lots of it, and have a diet cola and sit down and write this because you can. A poem entitled Peace by Ted Berrigan from the collected poems published by University of California Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org, and by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Produced by Joy Biles, assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's about 26 minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My next two guests are here to make us laugh. Phoebe Rohrbacher is here, who always gives a smile and is capable of generating a laugh. And Keith Barony, who does it for a living.
That is true, Pat.
Are both here. And Keith is going to do a comedy show, and this is part of the ongoing way in which we fund the efforts of the Alaskan AIDS Assistance Association, which Phoebe is kind of in charge of, and wonders exactly why she said yes, right?
Right, and it's, the Alaskan AIDS Assistance Association, which is also known as the 4As here in Juneau.
Usually when you come in, you're bringing three drag queens with you. So this is a new venue.
So just right. One
I just
is surprising.
One. I was about to just say that, yeah. Put the words right out of my mouth.
Sorry, I didn't mean to step on your line.
No, that's
baby.
Okay. That's your job.
Well, I got to tell you, I travel all over the world. In fact, I'm going to be in Singapore and Bahrain in a couple of weeks. I travel all over the country. But I know I'm in Alaska when I see Edward Hopper's Nighthawks with grizzly bears and bald eagles in place of the actual diner.
I should tell our listening audience, on the wall of the studio is the T-shirt that we awarded to people who pledged a certain amount in our membership drive a couple of years ago. And it is indeed a wonderful parody on Nighthawks that a number of people walk in here and they look at it and they think, there's something strange about that painting. It's
Yeah, well, first of all, it's clear the grizzly has had too much to drink. Well, and someone should be calling him a taxi.
That's an ongoing problem with grizzly bears in Juneau. It's something that we have to deal with because they do that in order to get ready for the hibernation. You know, so.
I don't know. I've heard sometimes a lumberjack will put a grizzly outfit on. So, I mean, you never
really
know.
Let me tell
you,
pulling a grizzly over for a DWI is something every cop wants to try at least once.
Awesome.
So, Keith, where's home, if there is such a place?
I'm in show business, and I like excitement, so I moved to Salt Lake City.
Oh, okay.
Where else would a former Orthodox Jew and a comedian move but the land of the
LDS? It follows as the day of the night.
Yeah, well put. Yeah, okay. I'm there mostly because of the beauty that I encounter there, but I'm really, the other part is that I'm in the Federal Witness Protection Program, and this is a colossal error on my part to appear on air. But I've heard that it's not going to ruin my cover at all to be on this show.
No,
so.
No, the viewer is not about to call anybody. Okay, so Phoebe, where did you find this ne'er-do-well?
Yeah, good question.
30 seconds, he's got me pegged.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, I think one of our advisory board members, Steve Hamilton, who is the general manager of the Baranoff, where the show is going to be, had been in contact with,
yes.
with Keith.
I didn't know Steve had served time. Is that?
Yeah.
Hey, in our defense, minimum security, okay?
Right.
Let's not misrepresent.
Yeah. So we thought it'd be a great opportunity for a fundraiser for the 4As to pair up with Keith over here.
And they have been so gracious about it, Pat. I'm telling you, this time I've decided I'm going to be funny during the show.
Hey,
just to change it up a little bit.
Yeah, I think from what I've heard in the reviews, I think that's going to be a new step for you. It's a great place for your career to go, Keith. Yeah, and are you expecting that the audience will laugh during this?
I'm expecting that the audience will have a very good time. I'll tell you, we have a saying in my business. If you want to have a bad show, invite your family. And nobody from my family is going to be there Saturday.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And only a couple people from my family are going to be there. So only the very funny people.
Phoebe, a word or two, if we could, maybe on a slightly more serious note. Tell me about the status of the Alaskan AIDS Assistance Program.
Well, you know, the fundraising is going to be going towards our prevention program. And prevention dollars are getting harder and harder to come by. Especially here in Alaska. And so, our prevention efforts are ongoing. We continue to do education in the prison, and at Gastineau Human Services and at, Rainforest Recovery. And we continue to run the syringe exchange. And we're trying to empower people through education, to make safer choices. To reduce their risk of HIV.
So there these ongoing programs require a certain degree of funding,
yeah.
Which is one of the reasons that you bring in guys like the comedians and
the
wonderful
queens
drag
and,
queen show
yeah,
and all
exactly,
that sort of stuff.
Exactly. So all the money will be staying here in Southeast Alaska to fund these types of programs.
And 4AIDS is Alaska AIDS Awareness Association?
Alaskan AIDS Assistance Association. And I suppose I forgot to mention, we also do HIV testing. And so all these programs are very important, but they do require money to keep them going.
Before we step away from that and back to Keith's show, let me know or let us know how we can contact you if there was someone who wanted to for one reason or another, wanted to contact the 4AIDS program.
They can call the main office here in Juneau, which is 586-6089. Or they can email me at, well, maybe I'll just tell I'll tell the website instead.
Okay, good.
It's at www.alaskanaids.org.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So alaskanaids.org. It's
yep.
an easy one to remember. So if for some reason you would like to contact the Alaskan AIDS Assistance Association, either for personal reasons or if you'd like to make a donation,
mm-hmm.
I'm almost certain Phoebe would accept a cash donation as necessary. It sounds like your programs are fairly expensive to administer.
Yeah.
And so every little dime helps.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, thanks.
So, Keith, thanks you so much for bringing a little comedy to the venue here.
I think you brought it, Pat, and I just rode the crest, but thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to point out, because this is such a multi-textured community, that for the Anglos, of course, it's 4 A's. If you're of Latino descent, it's 3 A's and an S. So just
okay.
Make sure you don't make that – don't get confused. Right, Sita? Right? Is that the –
Oh, Sita, yeah.
So just, you know, in case that throws anyone off.
Okay.
But, yeah, it was my pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Hey, looking forward to the show. And it's, one more time, it's Saturday night at 7 o'clock?
Yeah,
It's a Saturday, 8 o'clock the Westmark Baranoff Treadwell Ballroom.
Okay.
And you can get tickets at the Jack.
Okay.
So. I can't make it then, but please show up anyway. That's a little inconvenient for my schedule, personally.
Right.
Yeah.
And I do want to mention we have, if you get a ticket, then you can show it for and get 20% off a dinner or a drink at the Baranoff. So all the more reason to get a ticket.
Indeed.
Awesome. But the show will not be 20%. It'll be the same length.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm not doing a shorter show.
The time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Welcome to Juneau.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next installment of the KRNN Concert Series is coming up November 20th. Grace Elliott will host Blues by Association, Back Porch Blues and Deep Soul Grooves with some of Juneau's best blues musicians, Rylan Buehler, Rob Weber, Brian Nichols, Kyle Harris, Jim White, Nick Wagner, and Eric. These shows have been selling out, so if you want tickets, be sure to get them in advance at krnn.org or the station. That's Blues by Association, Wednesday, November 20th at the Goldtown Theater at 7 p.m.
Support comes from Southeast Living Magazine, Southeast Alaska's home, real estate, and lifestyle magazine, working to reach potential home buyers and featuring articles and tips on home improvement, available at various locations in Southeast. Thank you.
Music by Antonin Dvorak, the fourth movement of the string quartet, number 12 in F. A little class music for the follow-up of a wonderful little conversation we had about a comedy act that the 4A's are bringing to town. Keith Barney, he's going to be on Saturday night at 8 o'clock at the Treadwell Ballroom in the Baranoff. So drop by and take advantage of that opportunity. Saturday during the day, of course, you can get set for the comedy show by going on the Saturday hike. It's set up for Saturday in the Dredge Lake area. Group and conditions always decide the length and the final destination on these things, but because of the weather conditions, they're asking that people bring ice cleats and grippers, wear warm loads of clothing, and bring plenty of food and water. Meet at the parking lot by the Mendenhall River Bridge on the Back Loop Road across from Mendenhall River School at 9:30 Saturday morning, and no dogs or firearms, please. So the hiking season does not end when things get a little bit slippery out there. It's just a slight change up in the clothing and the equipment. Catherine Kell is the program assistant for Canvas, and she's here to tell us a little bit about some things that are going on at Canvas. Welcome, Catherine.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So what's going on at Reach and the Canvas?
Well, the first thing I'd like to highlight is that once again this year, the Canvas is going to be having a booth at Public Market. This year, however, we're going to have an even greater variety of artwork. We're going to including screen-printed T-shirts, hand-thrown mugs, handcrafted earrings, just a whole variety of artwork. The mugs were thrown and glazed by Canvas Pottery Studio Manager Brandon Howard and will feature artwork by Reach artists, including Kareen Jackson and Tammy Birch. We're also going to have an array of T-shirts. We're going to have some of our returning designs from last year, including a rendition of the Shrine of St. Teresa by Reach artist Gina Fricke, as well as a series of balloons by Marianne James. These designs are going to be featured on not only kids and adult sizes, but also baby onesies. So, you know, great
Catherine,
gift opportunity.
You use the term Reach artists twice,
yes,
in there. So are there people who are designated as artists who work with Reach?
Well, basically, the Canvas is a part of Reach. Reach is an organization that serves members of the community who experience developmental disabilities. One of the services that we provide is we have classes during the day, specifically for Reach clients who want to participate in the arts. We have a variety of mediums, including screen printing. They're doing collage work as well as paper mache sculptures. All in preparation for, we have our December show, which features just our Reach artists. It's Reach clients who specifically want to create art and take art classes at the Canvas during the day.
I one of my favorite places downtown is Pie in the Sky, which is in the entrance to Reach.
Yes.
And when I go in there, sometimes during the day, there will be an art class going on in the little space over there
in the art studio.
The enthusiasm of the people who are doing the art class is way beyond what you expect to see in an arts class. I mean, these are some excited people who are really getting into what they're doing.
Yeah, no, all of our Reach artists, they really enjoy, you know, what they do, the designs that they come up with. You know, they're just motivated basically by an interest and a passion for artwork, which is great. Makes for a great class environment.
Mm-hmm. And then you mentioned that you have staff who basically operate some of the, you said that there's the fellow that you said was casting the mugs and cups. So you have a professional staff of people who kind of lead the art classes and that sort of thing?
Yeah, well, basically we have two hired teachers, Inari Kulanen and Sherry McDonald, who are basically teaching the artists mediums that they're specifically talented in. Like Inari does a lot of screen printing. She works down Alaska Robotics. She's exhibited screen prints both here as well as internationally. She's originally from Finland. And then Sherry is working on like the paper side of it, like the paper mache birds that everyone is creating. And then we also have our ceramic studio manager who's leading a couple of our Reach clients in creating projects in the ceramic studio.
Catherine, how do you come into this operation?
Well, as the program assistant, I just kind of help out where needed. I run the reception area. I also do some job coaching. We have a couple of Reach clients who work at the front desk during the morning and during the afternoons. I also help with the marketing materials. So I help run the Facebook, the website, and basically any of the posters you've been seeing around town recently.
Have you done this kind of work before?
No, this is first time. Been here about a year now. So, yeah.
So you've kind of grown into the job and like that?
Yeah, well, it was my major. I majored in arts administration, so it's kind of a perfect fit.
Where?
I majored at the University of Kentucky in Lexington, Kentucky.
Oh, no kidding.
Mm-hmm.
So what brought you to Juneau?
Well, my family actually moved up here while I was finishing up my degree in University of Kentucky. I moved up here to do the job search from home base type situation, and then ended up landing a job in my degree at the Canvas.
Outstanding.
So, yeah.
Outstanding. So are there other programs besides the one which is just upcoming that are going on at Canvas?
You mean other than our Reach classes, our Day Hub classes?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We also have a wide variety of community classes. A couple of the ones that are coming up actually next week, we have a Youth Beginning Wheel class, which is being taught by Brandon Howard. It's going to be Mondays, November 18th through December 9th, 3:30 to 5:30 p.m. It's a four-week-long class. It's specifically for ages 9 and up, and it's designed to teach basically the introduction to wheel throwing, to ceramics on the wheel.
And this class is open to anyone in the Juneau community.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a charge for these?
Yep. That particular class costs $160, but all of our classes, the price includes the price of materials.
So,
yeah. All you have to do is bring yourself, basically.
Right. So learn to throw a pot or two.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what else?
Also coming up next week, we have a really exciting drawing opportunity. We have a double drawing, multiple figures, and composition class, which is being taught by David Woody. This class is unique in the fact that it's going to be offering students a chance to not draw from just one live model, but actually two live models simultaneously. It's going to be on Wednesdays, November 20th. Through December 18th as an evening class, 6:30 to 9 p.m., 5 weeks long, and it's going to be $240, and this includes materials and the price of two model fees.
Mm.
So that's, you know.
A real opportunity for someone who's, who's thinking about taking up the sketching thing or advancing their skills in the area. Yeah. What a wonderful resource the Reach facility has turned into. I think when it first started to be around, no one really understood exactly what it was going to be in the greater community sense, but it certainly has morphed into something that's a major part of downtown Juneau. Well, Juneau.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you so much for taking the job and for leading the way on some of this stuff.
Thank you.
Okay. So the next thing that's coming up one more time is the first class?
Youth Wheel.
Okay.
Which is starting Monday, and then we have a double drawing class, which is starting on Wednesday.
Okay, good. A little music then. Music by Charles Tomlinson Griffs. It's two sketches based on Indian themes. This was Lento Amesto. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. It's about 5 minutes before 4 o'clock. My next guest is Rosita Worrell. She's the president of the Sea Alaska Institute, and she's going to be giving a lecture as part of the series of lectures that have been happening on Tuesdays. This one is on Monday because of her schedule. This is a talk on Tlingit spirituality. Welcome, Rosita.
Yes.
Yes. So can you give me an idea of what you're going to be talking about?
I'm going to be talking about the Tlingit Icht, as we call this role, this position, and it's Tlingit shamanism. And I want, you know, it's a topic that a lot of people don't know about. I think there's a lot of misconceptions. And I just like to, you know, offer a lecture where people could learn about our spirituality and the role of Tlingit shamans in our society.
Rosita, this is part of an ongoing lecture series that has been going all month long as part of the National Native Heritage Month lecture.
That's right.
And so you're kind of joining a group of other speakers who've talked on various aspects of shamanism. A week ago or so, I interviewed a lady from the North Slope who was giving a talk in town on some differences up there. I was wondering, how will your talk intersect with hers? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, she was, Jana, and it was Jana Hacharak,
yeah.
And she focused on how they are trying to reintegrate their spirituality into their society, into the contemporary society now, into institutions that serve Native people. Whereas I'm going to be talking about the role of the Tlingit shaman in the past, and what aspects of Tlingit shamanism have survived into the present-day period.
So the difference then, I guess, between the two conversations here, yours is more the pieces that have survived into the present, and hers is more about bringing something to life. Am I correct?
No, really.
No.
I really want people to understand what is it that our shaman did. I mean, he served as intermediary between the natural and the supernatural. And I think as a consequence of the new beliefs, the new religions that came into our society, that it's resulted in a lot of misconceptions by our own people. And then also Western society really tried to suppress shamanism. So I think as a consequence of all of that, people just really don't understand, you know, what is it that a shaman did? And I think sometimes the Tlingit shaman is referred to as the witch doctor, and he was far from being the witch doctor. We did have witches, but the shaman really was there to help cure our illnesses. So
Rosita, your conversation your talk, your lecture will be over the lunch hour on Monday?
Yes, it will.
And the setting for this is the second floor,
It's the boardroom and fourth floor.
Fourth floor conference, or boardroom at the Sea Alaska building. Okay.
Right.
And it is a brown bag event, so if people want to come and bring their own lunch, they're certainly welcome to do that.
Great.
Okay. Thank you so much for alerting us as to the content of your talk.
Okay. Thank you.
This is KTOO Juno. You're in tune with us. We broadcast on a set of translators, K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juno, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. And support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and thank you very much from listeners like you. Monday at 3, we have a new host. Ken Fix is going to be your host today, on Monday for Juno Afternoon. He'll be talking to Margie Hamburger, the folks from the Blues by Association. Kate Helfrich will come in. Rena Sims and Paula Sundum will be back with a summary of the Turkey Drive. And Eagle Crest Standing in the Ski Town Throwdown will be talked about. Stay tuned now for All Things Considered.